Kelly, there have been many significant developments in Syria, a key player in stability or instability in the Mideast. Give us a bit of an overview as to what has been the climate in Syria and the most recent major developments with the fall of Bashar al-Assad.
What we've had all the way up until a couple weeks ago, now almost a month ago, has been a frozen war. We had a civil war break out after the Arab Spring in 2011, in which Bashar Assad, who succeeded his father in running Syria and had become quite a dictator there, really cracking down on opposition forces early on in 2011. And what you had was a very, very destructive war, and very complicated as well, because Iran and Russia came in to fight alongside of Assad's forces. And on the other side, you had a hodgepodge of Islamist rebel groups ranging from ISIS to Al-Qaeda, many groups in between. And then you had the issues of the Kurds coming in and wanting to establish their own state in the northeastern part of the country. That's where the United States came in and worked with many of those Kurds against Assad's forces. Then you have the Turks coming in who want to get at the Kurds and don't want them to have their own state. So as you can hear here, this is a very complicated mess that had evolved over the last decade. It became more frozen, but then I know you want me to get to what's happening more recently, but in short, the Islamist groups that had been gaining a little bit of foothold were able to overcome a very weakened Assad government and overthrow him this month.
With the overthrow, where does that leave Syria? You've mentioned pretty much a mess, for lack of a more diplomatic term. What impact will this have on Israel? I know Israel has been involved in military activities there. What are the concerns, the security concerns with Israel over the fall of Assad?
Israel is in a great position security-wise right now. What they had been doing all year since the October 7th attacks in 2023 has been bombing Syria. And they're not just bombing them willy-nilly. They have been bombing them strategically to reduce the influence and the military assets of Iran, which obviously has been in the IRGC, has been in Syria for some time. And so what they've been doing is taking out a lot of Iranian assets, a lot of Hezbollah assets. And so after the fall of Assad, they have continued bombing, taking out weapons depots, taking out radar systems, and they have been basically taking territory in the Golan Heights. As of most recently, they have basically entered the buffer zone that had been established by the UN. After the 1973 war, that like kind of maintained this sort of disputed territory between Syria and Israel and the Golan Heights. And they basically said, we're going to be here for a while. We're going to be here until we feel that our interest in the border is secure from any additional Hezbollah position. So they have been very canny in terms of maintaining their security boundaries, and preventing what they see as any incursions on them by Iran and Hezbollah. And both Iran and Hezbollah are very much weakened at this point, not only because of the fall of Assad, because of the war in Lebanon, in which, I mean, Israel has all but destroyed Hezbollah there, and continued bombing of Iran and taking out and assassinating a lot of its military leaders over the last year. So I would say that Israel is in a pretty good position security-wise right now.
Relative to the United States, President-elect Donald Trump, who tends to take a much more hands-off approach to a lot of these conflicts in the Biden administration, has said this is not our fight, we should not get involved. Given what you've just said here, Kelly, about the success that Israel is having, is it even necessary for the United States to get involved there?
I personally, and as a representative of the Quincy Institute, believe that no, it is not in U.S. interest to maintain a massive military presence in the region, to be directly involved in any proxy fights in the Middle East right now. mean, if you can recall, I think we're in like a third successive administration that has said that they would like to reduce the footprint in the Middle East. I think that started with Obama, and then President Trump actually said the same thing, and he actually made some moves in that regard. He wanted to get out of Syria. He wanted to get our troops home from Syria and as well as Afghanistan. And so there has been a long effort here to let the Middle East and all of these powers sort of find a way to work out their problems and maintain their own security. We give Israel $4 billion a year. They've built up a massive military-industrial complex. They are probably the most militarily powerful nation in that region. They can take care of themselves. And we've given a lot of these other Gulf states a lot of our advanced weaponry as well and trained them. So I do think that it is time that we start taking steps out of the region, because personally, a lot of Americans don't want to see another war. They don't want our troops there sitting out there like sitting ducks. We have 900 troops in Syria right now. We don't want to get dragged into another war between the Kurds and Turkey, for example. We have our ships out there fighting Houthis, and that's never ending. So I hope that Trump will take a hard look at what's going on here and see what the best strategy is for the United States and whether or not this sort of power projection, so to speak, or this footprint is really necessary.
We have been talking with Kelly Bokar-Vlahos, who is a senior advisor at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, and perhaps more to the point, editor of Responsible Statecraft magazine. So, Kelly, tell us a bit about the Institute and about Responsible Statecraft magazine.
The Institute was started about 5 years ago. So 5 years ago, 2019, as an action tank to sort of challenge the blob of Washington, D.C., the swamp. Basically, every think tank here is either very partisan and represents a team, a Republican or Democrat, or in terms of foreign policy, represents a sort of military-industrial complex, the sort of war party, the bipartisan war party. We wanted to take the we've taken the temperature of the American people, know that they are not happy with the last 20 years of our war policies and sending our men and women overseas for Washington strategy that most people can't really explain or understand, and start trying to formulate a new foreign policy that is more focused on diplomacy and engagement. We're not isolationists. We want to just retreat from the world, but engagement that does not like put guns and bombs first and sort of says, okay, can we solve our differences through talking? And so I've been with them for 4.5 years now. And like you mentioned, I run our website, which has great voices, people not only on staff, but contributors outside who are talking the language of restraint and realism in foreign policy.
And Kelly, give us a website where folks can go to learn more about the Institute and also read Responsible Statecraft.
Quincy Institute, QuincyInst, like institution.org, and responsiblestatecraft.org.
We have been talking again with Kelly Bokar-Vlahos of the Quincy Institute. Kelly, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.